From the frozen lands of Minnesota, two adventurers, Adam and usually Dave, battle the harshest internet connections to bring you another episode of the Digital Soup Podcast. Their opinions are unqualified, but the conversations are good.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is episode 189 of the Digital Soup Podcast, where we are answering questions that you didn't ask. And today we're going back to 1986. We're going to tackle the 10 biggest events of that epic year. But first, joining me as always is my good friend, Adam. What's new, my man?
Oh, man. So much new stuff.
So much new.
Oh, I've been catching up on watching the show Vikings.
Ooh, see, I got two seasons in and I loved it. And then I was waiting for the third and fell off the train and never finished.
It is still good.
How far in are you?
Season six.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because what season
was
it? I was
up to season four and a half or season five before, but it's been a while. I had to go back and watch the recaps.
Which season was it when, I don't want to give away spoilers, but a main character, a very main character dies? If you know your Viking folklore, you'll know who we're talking about. Was that three or four?
Like the main character?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing four.
Sounds about right, because then his kid takes over or something, I think, if I remember my history correctly. I love the Viking history, man.
It is such a cool show because a lot of times they're talking about Asgard and stuff. I'm like, oh, from Marvel?
No. Nope, this is the real deal.
From actual Viking.
Who is the
it's cool. There's
that show is so good. And the woman they cast as, what's her name, Lagertha. Yeah.
Yep.
That, you know, I remember that show was going on obviously when Game of Thrones was going, and everyone talked about some of the fierce
Catherine Winnick is her name.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them talked to, you know, a lot of people would compare her to Natalie Dormer, even though her character wasn't a warrior, but some of the great warrior women in Game of Thrones, it's like, no, this woman, this actress is just like perfect for this role.
It's amazing. My only issue is her accent is terrible.
Well, yeah, there's that. But really,
do
any of us know what a Viking accent is, though?
No, but hers is just, you could tell that it's
fake. It's a little.
But her, she's got a big background in martial arts.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yep.
And I remember reading that and seeing, she really knows how to fight.
Yeah.
And of course, she's playing a shield maiden in here. And I tell you what, you get into season six, and man, yeah, you should pick this back up. It's pretty good.
So I'm gonna jot down.
My best impression is a Floki.
Yeah. Right. I am going to absolutely pick this back up. I'll probably just restart the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I want to throw this out.
I'm watching it on Amazon Prime, so they've got the whole thing up there.
Perfect. And I want to throw this out to you because I love like the Viking folklore and mythology and everything else. What do you think about sometime in the future here? Not next week. It'll take a little prep, but doing a Viking folklore mythology type, like top 10 legends of the Vikings or something like that.
Sure. Whatever.
Something.
Any cool. Top 10 list will work.
Yeah. Well, this week our list. Now I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit. Adam, you've been extremely busy.
Yep.
And so I just went in and I made our top 10 list this week. This isn't one I found. This is one I put together on my own, sourced, researched. This is a Digital Soup original top 10 list. Some of the ordering may not necessarily be too specifically like this was bigger than that. More of just like here's 10 amazing things. And I tried to space it out so it wasn't too many like really sad things, you know, whatever. I tried to space it out, make it fun. All right. But I also went and I did all the questions for us this week, and I don't know how I did. We'll find out.
We will find out shortly because I did not read these.
Yeah, this is a bit of a kind of role reversal, and the fact we also got some really awesome, like a ton of song selections for our Super Friends playlist on Spotify. So we got a lot of cool stuff to get to. So in true role reversal fashion, are you ready for some questions?
Let's do it.
All right, so we're going to start off. You know us, a couple of old fat guys. We always love food, so
speak
I want to know.
For yourself.
I just did. Okay, just one fat guy here. I want to know from you, what is one of those most delicious meals that you like that would actually be considered kind of like a poor man's meal, poor man's version? It's not like fancy food.
Love it or hate it? Yeah. I've corned beef hash with eggs.
Okay. Dude, I can do that.
That is some satisfying stuff if you get a good crust on it.
Yeah.
It comes out of a can like elbow. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I can't eat the canned stuff. Can't do it.
The real stuff's even better, but
right.
It's still something I like. It's weird.
You like the canned stuff?
Otherwise, ramen noodles still, I mean, I go all out with ramen noodles. I soft boil an egg. I cut that in half. I get that in there, green onion, some kind of meat, some kind of protein. I usually don't use the instant ramen broth packet. I'll make my own broth, beef sure. stock or chicken stock, whatever Perfect. It is. And then add some other stuff to it.
I've got to ask you, I just want to clarify, you do actually like the canned corned beef hash?
Yes.
You do? Okay, interesting. No, yep. I can't do that. I just can't do it.
I mean, send me a crate of it, but
I'm going to send you like a whole truckload of it because you love it.
Heck yeah. During the pandemic apocalypse, it'll last forever.
You know,
it's got potatoes, it's got meat, it's got salt.
Yeah. The best way we do it, and I love it, and it's such a good use of leftovers, same thing, but whenever we make like a pot roast, you've always mm-hmm. got your potatoes and carrots and everything else that's in there. And you take that pot roast and you kind of let it, sear in a pan. It's all, kind of like a twice baked type thing. Get that crust on it, like you said.
Yep.
Oh, with a good pot roast, leftovers in there, you can't use up leftovers any better than that.
That's true. I guess the only other one that I'm thinking, if you're talking poor man's, you're talking, I barely spent any money on this.
Right.
Hamburger Helper is phenomenal. I'm going to be honest.
Have not had Hamburger Helper since bet you it's been 10 years now. When Jason moved away out to Ohio, because when him and I would hang out, that was like a staple. We'd usually go over there, because we worked at the same place for a lot of those years. And after work, I'd head over to his house and he'd always, he lived by himself. We were both single dudes. So he's like, I'm making some Hamburger Helper. You want some? Yeah, sure. I'll come over there and eat instead of going home.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Yeah.
The last thing I'll add, mm-hmm. so Filipino food is geared towards low budget stuff. So
right.
It's the most famous of Filipino dishes, in my opinion, is chicken adobo, which is
adobo is a spice, right?
No, not in the Filipino sense of things. Adobo, if you're looking at like Mexican food, adobo is a spice.
Okay.
Completely different, even though it's got the same name.
Sure.
Adobo you basically are braising some sort of meat in a mixture of like soy sauce, vinegar, and like a bay leaf, peppercorns. Some people put onions in it. A lot of families have their own recipes.
That sounds delicious.
It is phenomenal. It falls off the bone. It's good. Mm. And it's super easy. There's tons of garlic in it. It's super, super simple. Most Filipino dishes are really your basic ingredients like soy sauce and garlic and stuff and some kind of protein and a vegetable. It's just cheap stuff.
Do you serve that within rice?
Yep.
Okay.
And the sauce reduces down to an awesome like rice topping.
Sure. Not quite gravy, but kind of.
Yep. It's, I don't know if it was,
Gordon
Ramsay had some burger contest and this lady won with her adobo burger.
Oh,
it's like Filipino flavored burger.
So it's
starting to pick up a little bit. Chicken adobo.
I'm trying to remember there was something just a couple episodes back. You said you were going to try and convince me of, cause you were going to cook it. Cause I said I wasn't a huge fan and now I can't remember what it is. So you're off the hook for that, but your fried rice you made when Jason and I came down there last summer.
Yep.
By the time this whole pandemic thing lifts and we can actually travel and hang out in person, I'm gonna need to hit some of that fried rice and some of that chicken adobo. That sounds delicious.
Oh, we'll do it.
We'll do it.
It is a phenomenal combination. I haven't ever had a meal with where I've made chicken adobo where somebody didn't go, this is good.
Yeah, it sounds delicious. I bet you my wife would maybe not like it, but she is like the pickiest eater.
She probably would like it.
If she doesn't, she doesn't listen to this. If she doesn't, don't be offended because she doesn't like anything. She's picky.
Does she like egg rolls at all?
sometimes.
Okay, we'll talk later offline.
Yeah. But anyways, I'm gonna go with one really simple, and I caught a little heat from this, and I can't say where it's from because it's something I did that's coming up, hasn't come out yet by the time you're listening to this. But my good friend Mac, friend of the show, you know him, we all know him, and he heard me say something, and I still stand by it. It's super cheap but so delicious. Is making just a good old fashioned grilled cheese sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
But before you put the cheese on and throw it all in the pan to start letting it get melted and toasted, put just a very thin layer of like a good, say like raspberry or wild berry jam. So it's got kind of that tart sweetness. Not a lot. You don't want a lot. You don't want it oozing out like on a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. A
thin layer.
Just a real thin layer of a good jelly or jam. You want something that's got a little bit of tartness with the sweetness. So that's why like raspberry works really well.
I can see that working. Have you ever had a Monte Cristo?
Yep. It's like kind of similar premise.
Battered fried sandwich that you could...
yeah. Heart attack. So good for
you. I love it.
Yeah, I don't love those sandwiches because they are so greasy and heavy. Mm. But you make a good grilled cheese sandwich. Use a good cheese too, like a... I like to use like a Gouda or Munster or something like that, or some mix of like Munster and sharp cheddar, something like that, with that little bit of a sweetness and tartness from that thin layer of jam in there. Oh, it's so good.
I will consistently want to have at least a slice of American cheese on mine.
Well, you could certainly do it with American. Only because of the melting factor. It's just not... American isn't going to give you that contrast of the tart and sweet and that tangy from the cheese. You know, that savory.
No, but you should do more than one slice. Put one slice of American slice of something good, and then you get kind of a good mix.
Load the cheese up on there. Yeah.
Maybe add some bacon and a burger patty.
Suddenly you got a grilled cheese bacon burger. I love it.
I told my wife, you know, I made myself a burger today for lunch.
Sure.
But I had a clean pan on the stove and it was my wok. And I'm like, the burger batter would fit in there. I cooked a burger in my wok. I used it yesterday to do some cooking and I cleaned it out and set it back on the stove. I'm like, oh, it's right there.
Yeah, why not?
It's cooked it perfectly. It's nonstick on the bottom after it's, you know, because it's seasoned.
Mm-hmm.
So it was awesome. Came out perfect. What's wrong with that? Sear.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know.
Man.
It didn't taste like Asian food, but.
Well, you know, but a good burger, you know, that's a pretty solid replacement.
Yeah. Can't go wrong.
No. All right. So I'm going to hit you with the next one. This one's a little heavier, may require a little thinking, but it's a two-parter. No. First off, do you think video games in today's culture should be discussed in school just like books and movies are? And the second part of that is, if so, what would be some of the most interesting games to interpret or discuss as pieces of art? And why do you think that?
So it sounds like this question is geared from like an art perspective where, we're going to discuss this book.
I would guess so. Yeah. Like a cultural art, you know, like impact. Yeah.
I've never thought about it, but as soon as I saw this question and as soon as you asked it, I'm thinking games today have gotten so much deeper than even a lot of movies and artwork that why not? Why can't you? I mean, you've got a lot of people that the world of development for games is open wide up. Anybody can make them. You just download the Unity engine, the Unity browser, and or not browser, development tool.
Right.
Engine is what I was trying to think of.
we got there.
Unity engine.
Mm-hmm.
So what games would be interesting to interpret or to discuss as pieces of art?
Yeah.
You know, really, I guess that's kind of subjective. It really depends on...
Are you looking at like the art style, like the actual character and world design? Or are you looking at like, when I saw this at first, I was like, no, what is this nonsense? And then I started thinking like you from the art aspect, I'm like, you know what? If you're taking some kind of a class in, like, say you're when you get older and you have some of these other English classes that aren't just like grammar and sentence structure, where you're learning about like literature and storytelling and poetry and stuff like that. From a pure writer's perspective, absolutely. Look at how games they put as much effort into some of these games as feature films.
I think that the discussion could be about many aspects of the game.
Sure.
Because a video game is more of an experience than something you just look at or watch.
Right.
And so if you have a game like I'm gonna take Last of Us, which I haven't played, but I was thinking it had an emotional impact to you.
Yeah.
The mood and setting of Skyrim to me was astounding. I had never played a game like that, open world with that. It was just amazing. I couldn't wait to get back into it every single day after work. I'm like, oh, are we done doing stuff? Because I want to play some Skyrim.
Here's one. You know, and then school element. What about the last couple Assassin's Creed games? I mean, all of them arguably, but the last couple especially, they released modes in Assassin's Creed Origins, I believe it was, where it was essentially a history tour through the game as you were going through Egypt. It took you to all the sites, all the historical things they added. I mean, a lot of those games are perfect for any kind of world history class.
Yep. Well, and you take any retro game that had a huge impact. You look at the classics, Mario Brothers, you know, Sonic, any of these that have inspired people to create other games or to create, you know, anything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole huge aspect to it. Man, that would be awesome if they had video game lore in college or video game, you know, all that kind of stuff, which maybe they do. But if you consider like when you and I went to the Science Museum and they had this video game stuff on display, real artwork, real artistry, real graphic design, gameplay, stories.
I mean, these were hand-drawn, like, sketchbooks you'd see pages of.
And you know what? They sucked.
They did not.
No, I'm just kidding. They were awesome. I just felt like saying that.
No, I'm going to throw something at you. You mentioned Super Mario Brothers. Listeners, you'll have to stay tuned. We don't know. He doesn't know when he's dropping it yet or what's going on, but I recorded with Jason the other night on his new project he's working on a podcast. And part of our discussion, we were talking about Super Mario Brothers. You ever think about the fact that because they call it Super Mario Brothers, really that's saying that their last name is Mario? Because you wouldn't say like, oh, it's the Adam Brothers. You'd be like, no, it's your real last name.
Holy crap.
Okay. So then you think of that, and that means that Luigi is actually Luigi Mario. That's his name. But that also means, and according to what Jason found in his research, according to what Jason found, a very high-ranking person at Nintendo said Mario's real name is Mario. That is freaking ridiculous.
Well, it's no different than Macaulay Culkin.
My name is Dave.
If you guys didn't know this, Macaulay Culkin like changed his name and he had like a contest for what his middle name should be. Yeah. And the winning vote was Macaulay Culkin, thus making his full name Macaulay Culkin.
What was the, they named a boat or naval ship or something like that?
Bodie McBoatface?
Right. Yeah. People are dumb with names, but
don't go to the internet for suggestions. But anyway,
that blew my mind. Mario is their last name.
His parents sucked at naming. Yeah. His last name is Mario. What do we know? Maybe we call him Mario. Oh, okay. Sounds good. I'll do it. Mario.
Exactly. Well,
this is Luigi Mario.
You're doing some catchphrases there almost. Let me ask you this. What's a common saying that annoys you?
We have to cut and I got to think here.
Heck no. I'll give you one.
Okay. Give me one.
I'm going to go with, and you know, I think we had something similar to this, like pop culture phrases, but things like, remember when I was talking, it was internet slang. That's what it was. But when people literally say this out loud, when they're talking, I hear it now and then from younger generations like, "Hey fam, what's going on?" That kind of stuff. I hate it.
Leet speak. I guess I would say I've got more of a category that annoys me is when people
hit it.
Intentionally use grammar improperly.
Sure.
On purpose. Like, it do be like that. You know, or, I hate that when someone says weird flex, but okay.
Yeah.
Like some of that stuff, which I don't really hear people say often.
No, it's an internet thing.
I think the most annoying one to me is I know, right? Even though I say it.
Yeah.
Like, I know, right?
One I'm guilty of, and I've heard this blamed on being a Minnesota thing, is the phrase when people will be like, yeah, no. Yeah, no.
Yeah, it do be like that.
Yeah. So here's one I was thinking of. that dry. It's a very common saying, but it annoys me every time I hear it. And I don't even know the right way. I hear it both ways, and I feel like one of them is blatantly wrong. But when someone says, oh, we've got some exciting stuff coming down the pipe or down the pike.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking it's down the pipe with a P.
I always think it's pipe, but it's pike.
It is pike. Okay.
It is pike.
That makes sense.
Down the pike is actually like, if you look at it, there's actually Google searches. Is it pike or is it pipe? And
right.
I'm not going to consult Merriam-Webster right now.
Yeah.
The original phrase down the pike means in the course of events or more recently in the future. Pike was short for turnpike.
Sure. Makes sense.
And the phrase refers metaphorically to something coming further down the road. Recently yeah. mistaken for down the pipe, which is, you know, kind of like in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
This is awesome. I'm on Merriam-Webster.com. There's a picture of Mario and it says, it's a me, a Miriam. I'm not kidding. It's right there.
That
it's
is
a picture
awesome.
Of freaking Mario going down a pipe. That's why.
Yeah. That's one it's a very classic saying that drives me nuts.
Well, that's because most people aren't. And I used to say pipe.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait a second. Did that person say pike? Have I been saying it wrong? Because to me, I didn't know what a pike was. Like, yep. Isn't that like a spear or something?
When I think of a pike, yeah, I would think of like a halberd, like, you know, like an old spear type thing. They put yeah. a head.
I think
a head
of a northern.
Yeah, northern.
I'm going to catch me a pike out there and it's going to be huge.
There's that Fargo accent. I told you I rewatched Fargo, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, real quick tangent on that. Great film. Amazing film. Story is awesome. That accent, I know there's Minnesotans that talk like that, but not a lot. It's a little, you know, a lot exaggerated. Let's just put it clearly. Super exaggerated accent. But then the other part, there was like the directions of things, like where things are in relation to each other. I don't think people realize how big this state is, because there's a scene where your main character, the chief, I can't think of her character's name, but Frances McDormand, she has to go to the Twin Cities from Brainerd, which okay. Brainerd is in kind of mid-central western Minnesota, maybe almost north central. And the Twin Cities are more southeastern.
It's 130 miles, basically.
Right. And on the way back to Brainerd, she decides to take a quick swing through the lake or something, she says, a nearby lake where they suspect that maybe these killers might be hiding. That lake is Moose Lake, which is about 120 yeah. miles northeast of the Twin Cities and about 200 miles away from Brainerd.
And you can't she just win them all.
Made a swing through there. But it was so good. Here's another one that drives me nuts sometimes. Oh, shoot. Now it just went out of my head. Ah, I hate when that happens. Put a pin in it. That's the one. You hear that a lot. Yeah, let's put a pin in that and we'll come back to it.
We can table that.
Yeah, we can table that. I hate that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What about old, which one?
Bro.
Bro. Yeah.
You watch any kind of gamers or you hear any streamers or anything? Bro. Bro. Mm-hmm. Bro.
Yeah.
What?
Yep. What about the old saying of, you know, don't cry over spilled milk?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. You don't hear it too often. Yeah.
Cut to the chase. Okay. That one's all right. I would just say, come on, get to the point. I wouldn't necessarily be like, okay, let's cut to the chase here.
Why don't you cut to the chase on the next one?
Next question. Oh. Yes. What is something you really want to learn more about and why? And what I mean is something that you've long been interested in, but maybe just haven't had time to fully dig into it.
There are so many things. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to get more into like astronomy and learn more of that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've got a telescope and I've got some books and stuff like that, but I have not put the time in to really get good at it so that I can have like an honest, good conversation with somebody about it. It's like, well, there's a star there, you know, that's made out of gas, right? I mean, I want to be able to speak, you know, I want to talk about the nuclear fission that's going on inside of there. You
so
know,
kind of like astrophysics in a way.
General knowledge of that kind of stuff would be cool. I think I've brought this up before, but like I'd love to be able to speak Tagalog, which is the native tongue of Philippines.
Oh, yeah, languages.
That one, that's huge. Mm-hmm. I can play some drums, but I'm not good. I can't actually do a lot of really fast stuff. And I can do a basic rhythm.
Sure.
I would love to learn more about, like, you know, more paradiddles and patterns and stuff like that.
Well, so those while we're having that, that big food meetup, I'll teach you some drumming. I'll give you give you a few tips, and then you can help me out on the guitar side of things.
All right.
We'll trade off. For me, you know, this is extremely nerdy, and it's kind of tied into something we talked about earlier with your Vikings discussion. There are certain topics in history that fascinate me, like the Vikings and a lot of the medieval times, you know, and different things like that. And there's some things there. What's that?
The restaurant medieval times?
No. I mean that era of our history.
My lord, we shall joust while you eat your chicken.
Yeah, no, not that. No, but there's a lot of things like that really, really fascinate. I mean, I'd love to be able to just spend time reading and researching and doing stuff. I don't know what I'd do with it, you know, once I learned it, but stuff like that I just love. Now, what's weird when it comes to history, I have so little interest. Like, I know about it and I've studied it some, but like Civil War forward in, you know, through like Vietnam, World Wars, all that. Most of that big stuff, it doesn't interest me. I'm more interested in like the Dark Ages. I don't know why. I think it's because there's this fantastic crossover that happens back then with a lot of the folklore and the actual Marvel history. And what?
Oh, Marvel.
Yeah. You know, crossover. Yeah, but no, really. I mean, you have the actual Vikings, and then you have all of that Norse mythology that they really fully believed in at that time. And there's this this really cool crossover of like the fantasy elements, because so many of the great fantasy stories you read, you know, authors and things, they pull from a lot of that to create these fictional worlds. And there's this just beautiful blend through that time period. So that's one thing for me. I'd love to just have time to fully dive in, just watching documentaries, reading books, researching articles, all that kind of stuff. It'd be a blast, but who's got time for that?
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah. So
that's a pretty cool thing to want to learn.
I don't know. You know, language-wise, there's one. I had 2 years of it in school, the French language. Yeah, English. I can't speak well. No, the French language. I wouldn't, you know, I used to be able to speak it and read it. Not great, but passable. Okay. You know, on a tourist level, I would have been fine. Now it's been so many years, I forgot most of it. Some phrases I can pick up still, but that's one because I have a bit of history with it already. I kind of wouldn't mind being able to kind of brush up and get really fluent in it. It'd be fun.
Sure.
Kind of, it's not really a useful language like Spanish or, you know, Japanese or something. Japanese would be cool too, but I hear that's incredibly hard, but French would be fun. So let me ask you this. What is your favorite one hit wonder song?
That Thing You Do by The Wonder.
Correct answer.
I quit.
That is such a great song. Obviously made for the film, That Thing You Do. Do you have any others that jump out to you?
The whole thing. Well, that one, I actually have that song in my Amazon playlist.
Yeah, it's a good tune. I mean, they made it for a film, but it's a solid song.
You know, so many one hit wonders out there. I'm gonna go into the 90s, you know, for a legitimate one. What the heck was it? New Radicals.
Oh,
up, kids, you got the dreamer's disease.
Yep. That's Get What You Give, is it?
I don't know. New Radicals.
It's their that's their one big song.
That's their big song. Yeah, You Get What You Give. I like that song. I think it's solid.
Yeah, that's a good tune. I was
not true.
I'm trying to think. There's
which Beatles song is it?
No Beatles song.
They only had that one hit.
You know, one that I always, it's kind of a cheesy song, but I don't know why, I just dig the feel of it. And it was kind of a one hit. You remember a song called The Way by Fastball?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember any other big hits they had, but that'd be one that I could.
I think they had one other song that wasn't quite as popular.
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you it is not the Macarena. I'm just trying to think.
Okay, reverse psychology time.
Yeah, no, totally not that. I can't stand it. You know, one, it actually... This band had other hits, I think, too, but like My Sharona from the Knack, they had a handful of hits, I think, but that was their biggest.
Sure.
But a song like this surprises me that they were a one hit wonder. But Tainted Love was still the original, still a pretty good tune, and they never really had another hit either.
I never liked that song.
I don't mind it.
Tainted Love.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's borderline now that
Why do I know the lyrics? I don't know. I've heard it a million times.
One hit wonders do that to you. Yeah, that's what I'd go with.
Yeah.
Why don't you take the next
Timmy
question?
Timmy T with One More Try from 1990.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see.
Number six.
No, I'm not answering that question.
I'm not really asking this, but I had all these serious questions in here, and I knew Adam would look through this, and I was hoping he'd just kind of blindly go to read and be like, what? And that's exactly what happened. I typed in the question, does size matter? And no, we're not answering that. It was just a joke.
Because we don't know.
We don't know. No way to know.
Probably.
No. My this last question is actually one we can kind of jump on this if we have some ideas, but this one I decided, you know what, let's ask our last question. Let's make one for the listeners out here. So Super Friends, this one's for you. We need you to reach out to us, let us know the answer. And so what I want to know is, as we do these questions each week, what are some things that you would like Adam and I to discuss in terms of information you'd like to learn more about? Basically, the idea being, what can Digital Soup teach you? Now, it doesn't have to be something that you think we know about. I mean, we'll look into it. I know Adam's a little busier than I am most of the time, so I can certainly do some research. But you guys know our interests. You know what we're into. What would you like to hear us teach you about? What information would you like to hear our take on, basically? Adam, can you think of anything off the top of your head that you kind of wish a listener would ask us about?
Feminine hygiene products.
You did it. That's we'll mark this at the 31 minute mark of this show that you said that, and now we're going to get tons of questions about which pad is the right one for my teenage daughter or something crazy.
No, don't do that. Ask questions about podcasting or music or photography, you know, general technology stuff, security stuff, geeky stuff, or cooking stuff, off the wall stuff.
Yeah. You know, off the wall stuff.
You know, we're opinionated.
Right.
And our opinions might be wrong.
I'd love to hear you, Adam, breaking down some more kind of detailed music stuff. Like, for example, like say a listener asks, you know, something along the lines of, hey, remember the song Zombie by the Cranberries? That's going to come up here in a minute. Tell me what about that song, in your opinion, makes it such a catchy tune? You know, a question along those lines that would make you kind of explain on a musical level. Sure. I don't know, just weird things like that. So,
can I use an NPR voice? What I would probably say is the upper inflective tones of the zombie.
Guttural throat sound that so greatly mimics the yodeling that was found in other places in the world.
That is a good song, though.
It is. So that's just good one for you guys. Let us know what you think on that front.
Yeah. And now I think it's time for some recommendations.
And now, Digital Soup recommendations.
All right. I'm recommending a YouTube channel. This one's for all my coders out there, or somebody that, if you're working on a project, this is one of those genres of music that you know, usually it's only instrumental, and it's very kind of 80s. It's called synthwave. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like an electronica driving, you know, retro style beat with some of the elements of it are going to be a little bit off key, you know, on purpose, just to kind of have that old sound to it. There's an awesome YouTube channel. I don't know who runs it. I just know that I enjoy their videos. It's called The Prime Thanatos. And they have new videos of just like over an hour of music every week. So this is the stuff I like to have kind of on the background when I'm doing any kind of coding or, you know, documentation or whatever kind of work you're doing. If you do IT stuff, or if you're doing just a garage project or whatever, it's one of those, it's background music.
Sure.
And if you like this style, if you like the 80s kind of stuff, synthwave is a genre that I personally like and recommend for that.
Well, I had not seen this channel, but I clicked through to it here based on your recommendation. I'm now subscribed because A, the idea of that kind of background music is always awesome. And B, mm-hmm. I am just scrolling through their like video thumbnails. And man, they have some really awesome like thumbnail art.
Oh yeah.
It's like hand illustrated or, you know, kind of just like kind of that indie culture, you know, from like the late 90s, early 2000s feel, 80s even, yep. where it's like just bizarre artwork, stuff you might see in heavy metal magazine. You know,
some of their videos that they, you know, if you watch them, it's just like an 80s kind of like retro car driving through like a light city.
Yep.
You know, it's just, it's kind of cool stuff. But
yeah, this is cool.
It's good background jam music. And this channel also has a live stream. I don't know how often it's playing, but they're just playing songs.
They're
it's
live through, right now it, as we through, record.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're also on Mixer.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know who runs this. I just know I enjoy it. So.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, it says, yeah, it doesn't say a name. Hello and welcome to the Prime, was it Thanatos?
I call it Thanatos.
Thanatos on this channel, wide variety of different electronic, synthwave, and retrowave music. But it does not say, looks like people can submit stuff to them too if you're interested. So very cool. That's an awesome recommendation.
Awesome. All right, what do you got?
I went with a YouTube video as well. Finally, not another podcast, but this was a video, speaking of the, you know, idea of folklore and all of that, the video is by Netflix. It's called The Witcher's Bestiary. And basically what it is it goes into looking at a whole bunch of the actual monsters that were used in the Witcher series and then kind of breaks down and shows you their actual mythological origins, which many of them, as the channel says, are pretty horrifying, and shows how they took like real folklore monsters and mythological creatures and turned them and transformed them into these crazy monsters for this Witcher series and video game. So kind of a nice mashup between this total fantasy video game and now series world and showing the quote unquote real world origins of them.
Nice. That's pretty awesome. All right. Yeah. For the Digital Soup's Spotify playlist, I'm adding, this is a classic. You've heard it. You like it a lot. Probably. Mm-hmm. It's a good jam. Timeless song. Timeless. Walking in Memphis by Mark Cohn.
Yep.
Cause you can put on your blue suede shoes and board the plane and,
you know, for so many years growing up, I don't know why, but I always thought this was Michael Bolton. I know better. Yeah,
the guy's
now.
Got a deep voice too, Mark Cohn.
Yeah, very, very good. I mean, what can you say? It's a classic tune. Very classic. Now, it's kind of funny because I went with a similar classic, well-known tune by Peter Gabriel from the 80s with the classic Sledgehammer.
Nice.
I don't know why the song popped in my head. I was listening to it while I was in my car a couple days back over the weekend or something like that. And I was like, that's it. That's my song. This week I'm picking Sledgehammer.
Little 80s, a little early 90s.
Yep. And, you know, my guy, Dave Matthews, on one of their live albums, I think it's Live in Denver, something like that. Live in Boulder. I forget what it is, but they do a live version of Sledgehammer. And it's actually, it's actually pretty rad as well.
Be your sledgehammer.
No, it doesn't even sound like that, but yeah.
I want to be your sledgehammer.
No, it's good, but I'm recommending the original here.
Nice. Heck yeah.
So
it looks like we've got some listener recommendations as well.
We did. We got quite a few this week. So some of them I know, some of them I've just listened to a little bit as they were recommended. So first up, our good friend of the show, Mac. He wanted to inject a little bit of a cultural vibe, ethnic vibe. Mac is from Poland and now resides in Canada, but he recommended, I believe, a Polish band. The band, I thought it was just called Hurt, H-U-R-T. However, that apparently, based on what he told me, loosely translates to the word wholesale here in the U.S. Lower He's got prices. Two songs by them. Now, I'm going to butcher these. He gave me some pronunciation guides, and I'm still going to butcher them.
I'll try it after you do.
Yeah, okay. So the first song is Pagoda Dla Siebie. I don't know. What would you think?
Yeah, Pogoda dla CABA.
Yeah. And so basically,
yours is better.
Yeah. The vocals in, you know, all the lyrics in these two songs he's recommending are in another language. That being said, there's some pretty good rock music. And he told me this song in particular that we can't pronounce. It's basically, it means weather for you. It's an uplifting song, he said. Kind of the idea that, you know, some people...
Weather is in like sunshine, rain, right. Weather. Yep.
And
weather.
So the idea is that, you know, there's poor people living in poverty and, you know, not getting ahead and, you know, kind of the haves and not haves. Rich have everything, yet they have nothing. But the premise of this song being that a new day has dawned and everyone, the weather is for everyone. Everyone can enjoy a sunny day. You know, whatever it is, kind of a cool concept, but it's wrapped up in this kind of interesting and fun, like European rock style. It's, I don't know how to explain it. You got to listen to it. It's pretty good.
Okay.
The second song from this group that he recommended, it's pronounced Zawoga G, which is basically a Polish name of an old anime series that was called G-Force. And the song is basically a tribute to kids in old Polish cartoons and series. And there's actually, if you listen closely, you'll hear a reference to MacGyver in this song. Yeah, they actually say his name a couple times. I think it's in part of the chorus. And nice. So just a couple fun songs. And it's some good, you know, international flair into this list. So what do you want to tackle the next one?
Sure. It looks like the mailman sent over a few songs. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're talking Zombie by the Cranberries, which that was more of a James Hetfield version.
I'd love to hear that official version.
Zombie!
Like heavy. Yeah, oh, that'd be good.
Actually, there was another band that covered it that's pretty darn heavy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who that was, too.
It was a Five Finger Death Punch. I don't remember who it was.
Someone like that,
by the Crash Test Dummies. Yes. Oh man, this song I listened to back to back so many times as a kid.
Oh.
Once there was this kid. Yeah. I don't know why. Why did I like that song?
It's I don't know, but it's catchy great. And it's still good.
You know, exactly. It's still catchy, even though there's like, well, what is this about?
Yeah.
Interstate Love Song by Stone Temple Pilots. Classic. Yep.
Classic. Oh,
yeah, we're all 90s, right?
We're going 90s. And the reason these were on his mind, he actually has been doing something pretty awesome. He, that goofball in the world of streaming, and the mailman has his own DJ service and everything else. He has a side business he does as well. And so he's not just a mailman, but he's been picking up and ordering CDs, like actual CDs from Amazon or wherever, getting good deals on them. But he's getting some of his favorites. The other one that he didn't send me a song for, but I know he just got the album. His significant other got it as a gift for him, I believe. It was the classic alternative grunge from Australia, if I remember. Do you remember a group called Silverchair?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Him and I used to listen to that album, the Frog Stomp album, their first one, all the time. I mean, that was another one where we just belt out those songs. And that was with, I'm trying to think of the biggest hit off there. And now that my...
Oh,
why is my brain escaping me? I can picture the song. I just can't come up with the words. You're going away too, fat boy. Fat boy. Tomorrow, it's called. Wait till tomorrow. Yep, that's it.
That was them? Okay.
That was them.
Yeah, nice. So you know that Daniel Johns,
mm-hmm.
the singer,
yep.
He did kind of a really cool cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yes. Yes.
On that I saw on YouTube. It's that was probably years ago now, but
yeah, that band was really interesting because when they hit it big, they were literally, you know, like Hanson, young kids, 13, 14, 15 years old. And
they looked like Hanson.
Yeah. And as they got older, when they hit kind of that late teens, early 20s, their music changed, obviously, and music as a whole had changed in the world at that time. And they had one other album I remember that was pretty big, but they really dropped off. But they actually are pretty solid. Like, they're still a solid rock band. The last couple things I've seen from them. So, anyways, nice. So that's from the mailman. And lastly, the man that has almost single-handedly populated this list, which we love, keep him coming, is our super fan and friend of the show, Jesse.
Super
fan. He's got a song here. It's called Lazy Eye by the Silver Sun Pickups. Now, this is another one. Adam and I were both laughing pre-show as we were listening to this, and we're like, oh, this is good. man, you know, Jesse picks these great tunes that are kind of obscure, like not on the mainstream charts. And then Adam looks it up. It's like, oh, it's got 31 million views or whatever.
This is so obscure. Only 31 million people have watched the video.
Right. So Jesse's got his finger on the pulse. It's you and I that are, you know, obsolete. But this is a good tune. It really kind of has a musical feel that reminds me a lot, like I was telling you pre-show, musically, not so much the singing at all, but the instrumentation reminds me of that Smashing Pumpkins from the Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness type rock music. So good stuff.
So this is Lazy Eye by Silver Sun Pickups.
Yeah. So nice. Listeners, I know there's more of you out there. And those of you, Mac, Mailman, Jesse, keep them coming. We love seeing what you guys come up with on your playlist. So keep them coming.
You got it. And now a word from your sponsors.
Hey, super friends. As you know, we don't have any fancy sponsors, but we do have some important information for you. So listen up. First, if you want to keep up with everything we're doing here at Digital Soup, including how to find us on social media, all the ways to subscribe, and even how to support the show, head to digitalsouppodcast.com. We appreciate all of your support, including sharing Digital Soup with your friends. But if you want to do more than share, hit that button that says Patreon on the site and help support the show by becoming a Digital Soup Patreon backer.
Of course, Dave and I stay busy with our own projects outside of the kitchen as well. Dave is having creativity-fueled discussions designed to motivate, inspire, and encourage you along your own adventures in creativity with the Adventures in Creativity podcast. You'll find him at AICpod.com. And if you're interested in some amazing sci-fi stories from years gone by, I've got you covered with Yesterday's Sci-Fi. These are amazing, classic sci-fi stories in an audiobook format. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to yesterdayssci-fi.com for all the details.
Man, that's a lot, huh? Well, just remember this. DigitalSoupPodcast.com, YesterdaysSciFi.com, and AICpod.com. Now then, thank you again, all of you that are listening, for taking time to join us every week, and let's get back to the show.
You should give these guys money. Anyway.
Pay them, please.
Let's get into the top 10 biggest events of 1986. Without further ado, a list by our very own Usually Dave. Let's hit it. The year is 1986. Mm-hmm. I might be 7 years old at this time. What do we got?
Well, the first one up, this is a big news story that happened where, was it Imelda Marcos? I forget how to pronounce that.
Yeah, that's right.
He fled the Philippines. And basically what happened, he was the president.
Well, Imelda was his wife.
Imelda, yeah. Ferdinand was him. Yep. That's right. He basically lost the election and then forced himself to stay in power. And he ended up dying, I think, if I recall. But he fled the country because the population said, nuh-uh, you lost. He declared himself the winner over, I'm going to butcher this, Corazon Aquino, who was the wife of an assassinated rival. This woman also declared herself as the rightful winner, and the public rallied behind her. And so since he had been basically deserted by his former supporters, Marcos and his wife Imelda fled to Hawaii in exile, where they faced investigation on embezzlement charges. He later died, I guess, in 1989. So that was a huge news story. And you know, we've seen this happen so many times where a sort of, you know, even though it's technically a democracy, they vote, but how many times these people in some of these countries just declare themselves the winner? And it's all about who can get the most support and military might behind them to hold on to power. It's
crazy stuff. Crazy stuff.
This is one of the first times I remember hearing about something like that.
I remember hearing his name and stuff. And I remember, cause I, you know, that Filipino heritage that, mm-hmm. talking about it and stuff like that, but not in great detail. But yeah, I remember that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm. I just remember, like you said, we were pretty young in 86, seven, mm-hmm. 8 years old, depending on when this stuff happened. And
I had a beard already. It's not cool.
I mean, both of us probably did, but I mean, these are some of the news stories I remember they'd be showing on the nightly local news. They showed
Imelda Marcos's shoe collection.
Yeah, yeah, I do remember that.
Corruption all the way to the top. As high as it gets.
It's crazy.
Yep.
So you want the next one? I just realized the way I split this list up to make it kind of fun, you're going to get all the fun ones.
Yes.
So let's let it roll.
So It by Stephen King is the number one book of the year in 1986. Huh? That's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, when you look at it, he'd had obviously some other hits, you know, big books at that time. But It was one of those books. I mean, it's actually his 22nd book.
It put the It in hit.
Yeah. But this novel became a just massive success. I mean, like you said, this is 22nd book, but a massive hit that even now just finished the... Even though the second part wasn't so good, you said, but spurred the television series, the original miniseries, the films. I mean, all of that. And 86, what was it? I'm trying to think when it was released. September of 86 is when this was put out. Just before Halloween.
Nice. Yep.
Very cool.
Oh yeah, that's a that one's big in the pop culture.
Yeah.
What do we got next?
So this next one, this next one's going to go politics again. This is one I vividly remember this whole thing, the Iran-Contra affair. And you remember the Oliver North hearings? Basically,
I don't remember the details. I remember seeing that it was on the news. And
I remember they had his trial, like when he was facing the Congress or the Senate and they were questioning him, all of that stuff. There was a ton of stuff. Now, Reagan is the president in office.
Yeah.
Basically, the Iran-Contra affair, and this is from the history.com website from the History Channel. Iran-Contra affair was a secret U.S. arms deal that traded missiles and other arms to free some Americans held hostage by terrorists in Lebanon, but also used funds from the arms deal to support an armed conflict in Nicaragua. The controversial deal and the ensuing political scandal threatened to bring down the presidency of Ronald Reagan. So during this whole thing, I mean, this is a long story. We've got the whole thing linked up. You've got the hostages being held. 52 American hostages were held for 444 days in a diplomatic standoff known as the Iran hostage crisis. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff through like 84, 85 was leading up to this. And then it broke in 86, you know, all this stuff. Oliver North was named. Al Shearer first reported the arms deal. It was top secret. Basically, the crap hit the fan. Oliver North, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, came forward. He was of the National Security Council to acknowledge he had diverted the missing funds to the Contras in Nicaragua. He used them to acquire weapons. And at the end of this, at the thing, basically Reagan himself was never charged. In 92, George H.W. Bush, his vice president at the time, Reagan's vice president, he was elected president in 88. He preemptively pardoned Weinberger, who was a prominent figure in this thing. McFarlane, another individual that was involved with this, was charged with 4 counts of withholding information from Congress, sentenced to 2 years probation, $20,000 in fines. And Oliver North himself charged with 12 counts relating to conspiracy and making false statements. He was convicted in his initial trial. Case was dismissed on appeal due to a technicality. And he since worked as a conservative author, critic, television host, and head of the NRA. So this whole thing, it turned in. I mean, if you want to read
about
this.
That's a history lesson.
What's that?
I said, now that's a history lesson.
Yeah, if you want to read more, and I just literally skimmed over the surface, but if you want to read about this thing, if you don't remember it, I mean, this thing stretched on. It was multiple years. But I remember this, you know, this hitting the news and being on television every single day. And I used to hate it because the shows I wanted to watch, I couldn't watch because this stupid trial with Oliver North was happening for days.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those news stories of 86, of that time of my childhood, that just jumps to mind whenever I think of big news stories of when I was a kid.
Yep, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember. I was like, who the heck is Oliver North?
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what else was really big in 86?
You don't hear the name Oliver that often.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyways, I stepped on you there. What was that?
Oh, I said, you know what else was really cool in 1986 or big?
Mm-hmm.
Huge. Steve Winwood with a song called Higher Love.
Yeah.
Boom. This was the album of the year at the Grammys, the Higher Love song.
This, it, you know, it was crazy because I was looking at the top songs of that year, and I know that was a big hit, but I mean, this was released on my birthday in 1986, actually. There was some big tunes that this, you know, kind of stole a Grammy from. Madonna's Papa Don't Preach, Venus by Bananarama. Well,
she was in trouble deep, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Papa Don't Preach.
Yeah. I mean, this song, everyone knows it. You talk about like Sledgehammer and Walking in Memphis, another classic one that everyone has heard that tune.
Yep. Spent 4 weeks on the top of the Billboard album rock tracks. Very nice. So what do you got next? What is it? What do we have here? It's going to be something with Libya. I just know it.
It is. U.S. bombs, terrorists and military targets in Libya. Now, this this is April of 86. This is slightly tied in, I think, in part to what was going on with that Iran-Contra affair, but a little different. You had Gaddafi was the government leader, Muammar al-Gaddafi of Libya. And basically, U.S. went in, and again, I've got it linked up through history.com. There were five American citizens killed in simultaneous terror attacks in Rome and Vienna airports. Libya was blamed. Ronald Reagan ordered expanded sanctions, froze Libyan assets. They tried to do it the nice way. In March of 86, U.S. and Libyan forces clashed in the Gulf of Sidra, and four Libyan attack boats were sunk. U.S. had enough. Then on April 5th, terrorists bombed a West Berlin dance hall known to be frequented by U.S. servicemen. Things were escalating. There was one U.S. serviceman and a Turkish woman killed and more than 200 people wounded, including 50 other U.S. servicemen. U.S. intelligence reportedly intercepted radio messages sent from Libya to its diplomats in East Berlin ordering the attack. Now, April 14th, then, a couple days later, about a week later, U.S. struck back with dramatic airstrikes against Tripoli and Benghazi. Attacks were mounted by 14 different A6E Navy attack jets based in the Mediterranean and 18 different FB-111 bombers from bases in England. There was numerous other support aircraft involved. France refused to allow them to fly over French territory, so they had to go around. That added 2,600 total nautical miles to the journey from England and back. Three military barracks were hit, along with military facilities at Tripoli's main airport and the, is it Benina Air Base, south of Benghazi? And I guess all targets, except for one, were reportedly chosen because of their direct connection to terrorist activity with the previous bombing and everything else. The Benina military airfield was hit to preempt Libyan interceptors from taking off and attacking the bombers. And even before this operation ended, President Reagan was on national television discussing the airstrikes, saying, "When our citizens are abused or attacked anywhere in the world, we will respond in self-defense. Today, we have done what we had to do. If necessary, we shall do it again." Pretty strong words.
Yeah, no and kidding.
One of those examples.
Was this because they went after Doc Brown in 1985? Because I distinctly remember the Libyans in Back to the Future with RPG and AK-47
right
on American soil.
That was it. Yep.
So I'm just saying it's probably related.
It is. Has to be.
There's no way it's not. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Ernst Ruska of Germany won the Nobel Prize in Physics for creating the first electron microscope. That's actually pretty darn awesome. So this is a German physicist, and you know, his work in electron optics, including the design of the first electron microscope, got him this Nobel Prize. That's pretty darn incredible.
You know what threw me
on
this one?
This guy got his PhD in 1933.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. Like, 86... This guy was in college in 1925, and then he had this man, he won his Nobel Prize not until 1986. And not only that, but I don't know why, but it just seemed so weird to me that this electron microscope was just in, I had to look it up. Like I checked like all over. I was searching all over. Like, is this really when that was invented? For some reason, I thought that was around for way before that. I don't know why. Just had it in my mind that it was, but pretty cool. Like, that's a massive, you know, achievement in what he created there.
Well, it came out in 1939, actual electron microscope.
Okay. He was part of that. He developed the first commercially produced, it says, in 1939, and the developing technology. So is this just when he won the award for something?
This is when he won the award.
Because he pushed it to a certain level?
It's when he won the award, because he had built the first electron microscope actually in 1933 that exceeded the resolution attainable with optical light.
Oh.
So 4 years later in 1937, Siemens financed the work of Ruska.
Okay.
And his brother to develop the applications for the microscope. So this is back in the 30s. They were throwing electrons at stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Took them long enough to recognize it.
Well, and it sounds like, I'm sure he kept refining and kind of improving upon what their initial, from the 30s up to the 80s.
He probably kept zooming in on that process.
Let's put a pin in that.
He kept on zooming in so he could see getting closer and closer.
I thought that was just a cool science moment in there.
Yeah, I like that.
Now finally,
let's talk about games, though.
I'm going to give, you know what? Yeah, let's do, I'll take this one. It's a fun one. Nintendo drops 1985, but in 1986, they begin their domination of the video game market, by releasing titles that year, such as Legend of Zelda, Metroid, Kid Icarus, Dragon Quest. Some of the biggest names that you remember in video games were released in 1986. And some of these are actually franchises that to this day are still being, there's versions being made for new systems. Legend of Zelda is one such that they have not missed a single system that Nintendo has put out. There has been a Legend of Zelda or two.
Is that video game 34 years old now?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
We're old.
Yeah.
We're old.
Yeah. I mean, Nintendo put out some massive games that year. Now, there were some other kind of, auxiliary to this, some other big things in the video game world we can kind of lump into here if you want. Some new companies were formed. Companies we know well from today: Acclaim, Ubisoft, Bethesda. Those were all created in 1986.
Wow.
And in that same year, Activision started gobbling up other smaller companies to make themselves even bigger.
Did they use number munchers?
Maybe it's Maybelline. I don't know.
Oh boy. Okay.
Some of the other big releases: Gauntlet, which was a fantastic arcade game and eventually made some console debuts, I believe. But that one game of the year at Golden Joystick Awards. You remember playing Gauntlet in the arcade?
Vaguely. I think I played it once or twice.
Oh, really? I used to love that thing. Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Nice. You know what? Was it as good as the Chicago Bears crushing the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 20?
This is why I stumbled on that last one going, should I take this one or not? But I think it's funny. You can take the football question.
Well, under head coach Mike Ditka.
The Bears.
He won the 1985 NFL Coach of the Year Award. The Bears went 15-1 in the regular season, becoming the second NFL team to win 15 regular season games while outscoring their opponents with a staggering margin of 456-198. So, I mean, one of the key players of the Bears defense, Richard Dent, was named MVP with his performance in that game. And, quite frankly, it's the Bears.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a long-winded, terrible Chicago accent. I stole it from Saturday Night Live. I don't know if it's any good.
Well, sorry. I loved it. Let me ask you this. I know you're not a big football guy. Do you remember any of the other big names
like
from the
little
Bears
footballs
that year?
Any other names of the Bears?
Yep, like star players.
No.
You will when I tell you. You've heard of Walter Payton, right?
Yep.
Legendary running back for the Bears. He was their starting running back. You've heard of the Fridge, okay. William Perry?
Yeah, the Fridge.
The Fridge was the defensive lineman during this run. Who else is there? Jim McMahon, a rock star of a quarterback who didn't give two Fs about anything. This was the year the Bears put out a music video that was the Super Bowl Shuffle. It was arguably one of the most iconic championships in the sense that the Bears had one really dominating season here and then kind of stunk for a long time. No offense, Bears fans, but you know, Vikings, we feel your pain. You know, we've had some down years too, but the Bears had this really weird thing where they were like good, good, good. And Peyton, Walter Peyton, and their team was really good. They peaked, they had this dominating season, and then they just fell off a cliff kind of. They just couldn't hold up. But what they did, the way they brought the NFL and football to almost this, like, you know, this is the mid 80s. They had music videos. They had this was one of the first times you saw a lot of players getting recognized as kind of pop culture status outside of football.
Sure.
Because they just had this crazy unique blend of, you know, personalities on this team. And it really did some crazy things for the sport as it stands today. And they're still, I mean, they're a punishing defense. It's a fun, if you ever, I mean, you'll probably never do it, but listeners, if you ever go back and watch some of these games, it's a totally different style of football than you see now. Just punishing, like massive hits, tons of running, just amazing plays. I mean, you're watching legendary players. Walter Payton is amazing. Just to watch him run, it's a work of art, but This was a pretty big thing, you know, not just at the time, but it holds up as one of the most impactful teams in all of NFL history.
Nice. That's a good one. All right. Why don't you give us the number two?
All right. So number two, I'm sure everyone has heard of.
Oh, yeah.
This was the Chernobyl disaster in.
Yep.
Where was it? The Pripyat city. Yep. North of Ukrainian SSR. This is the nuclear disaster of all nuclear disasters. It was tried to, you know, there's that fantastic series that was on what, Netflix?
HBO.
Yeah, just horrifying at how they tried to cover it up. And because they tried to cover it up, it just got so much worse. And this thing was
everything botched. Is under control. No, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing was tragic, but it was also like, because the government tried to hide it, it botched things so bad that it's still toxic to go there today.
Yeah.
You know, and there are people they let in and you can only be exposed in there. You got to wear certain protections. You can only be there for so long and all this. But I mean, what is it saying here? The exclusion zone was later increased to 30 kilometers, a 19-mile radius. They evacuated, let's see, further 68,000 people. I don't know how many initially were evacuated. I'm looking for those numbers. About 49,000. So all over 100,000 people evacuated. The explosion itself killed two of the reactor operating staff. In the emergency response that followed, there was 134 station staff and firemen hospitalized with radiation poisoning due to absorbing high doses of what they call ionizing radiation.
It's basically considered to be the worst nuclear disaster in history
ever. Yeah.
And a lot of this had to do with some of the safety mechanisms that were built into this particular nuclear reactor, which ended up, you know, they fixed them and all the other ones before it happened, but it was wild. And yeah, it was the big mystery. There was, I mean, that you can see news reports. If you go on YouTube, something's happened over there. We don't know what it is, but you know, they're not being very forthcoming. I worked with a woman from Russia that told me, that she was a child at the time, and in the nearby town that she lived in, which wasn't actually super nearby, but close enough.
Right.
She said suddenly it started snowing one day in the summer.
Yeah.
Or not in the summer, but when it's not supposed to be.
Right.
You know, because this is like the end of April. It's in the middle of spring.
Right.
And suddenly it started snowing in that town because all the stuff had gone up into the atmosphere and came down. Oof. That's wild. You know, like, yeah, people were walking through it. And
right.
Ugh. Jeez.
So
the story of how it failed is ultra fascinating. If you go on Wikipedia or actually look up a YouTube video on what really happened, HBO took some liberties, artistic liberties with this stuff.
Storytelling. But,
I mean, basically all the stuff was exposed once the explosion happened. Like it was just blasting radiation out of it and it was lit up.
Right.
It was like lighting up all the ionosphere, the atmosphere around
it's glowing.
It.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's not good.
You know, I mean, looking at this here,
I'll put some cream on that.
What's that?
I said, you're going to want to put some cream on that.
Yeah, right. No, I'm looking at this here. They're saying, you know, it's difficult to actually determine the exact total number of exposure related deaths. But here's some numbers for you. Model predictions based on the Wikipedia article here. They vary from 4,000 fatalities when solely assessing the three most contaminated former Soviet states to about 9,000 to 16,000 fatalities from the entire continent of Europe. That's crazy just from this one accident. Yep. Now,
The post-nuclear fallout, I mean, the radiation problems it caused too.
Right. Well, and they're saying that in order for this to be completely deemed cleaned up, like nuclear cleanup, they're scheduling that for completion in the year 2065. It's still not even close. I mean, we're 45 years away from their target date.
Interesting thing was people knew that something was going on because it started spilling this radiation out and it was being caught in other countries, basically.
Right.
Wait a second. Where is this stuff coming from? I would argue that this would almost be the number one spot, you know, event.
I put this at number two only because on a worldwide level, I agree.
Yep.
But when we get to the number one, which we'll tackle in just a minute, this is one that on a U.S. level, as a kid, I remember hitting particularly
Everyone knows about this one.
Yep.
Who was alive at that point because you know where you were. You remember what it was like, especially if you're our age, you know, first grade. Everybody gather on the TV. Something bad's happened. We're talking about the space shuttle Challenger tragedy, which exploded. And what made it extra impactful is everybody knew that there was this school teacher on there.
First time a civilian was going up.
Yep. And boom. It's wild. There is some raw footage from, you know, the people that are across the lake for the launch that are observing, including Krista McAuliffe's parents.
Yeah.
You know, somebody caught like all of it on video. You know, they're all watching this happen and then it explodes. It's like people start realizing what happened. It is just terrible.
I remember watching this live. I mean, they had it televised. It was a big deal, and watching this happen live, and boom, and in when we were watching it, that footage, like as quickly as it could. I can't remember if I was in school or if I was at home. I'm trying to remember whatever it was. Oh, I don't know if it was a teacher or a parent. You know, immediately shut the TV off and was just stunned, like, oh my God, what, you know, what just happened? And that was one of the first times in my life I remember something outside of like a family death or, you know, something like that that's very personal that really shook me to the core. Like, holy cow, we just watched. Was that real? These people just blew up. They're dead, you know? And I remember a lot of kids saying like, well, maybe they got an escape pod and they ejected before it happened. And, oh, it looks, you know, because I remember people watching that footage. Well, and seeing parts of things, you know, scattering and people speculating like maybe that was an escape. Maybe they're okay and they were able to get clear of that. And until if the news was, you know, shortly within an hour, probably or 2 hours, saying there are no survivors, you know.
So here is the haunting thing about this. And I never knew this until maybe a couple of years ago when I was reading about it. The cabin that the crew was in basically survived the explosion.
Oh, really?
And so they were possibly lost consciousness from the forces, but it's also possible that some, if not all of them, were fully conscious on the entire way down inside the cabin. But the cabin basically hit the ocean surface at about 207 miles per hour. Which obliterated it beyond survivability. Like, but the possibility that the thing that is absolutely terrifying to think about is that they were in that for that whole fall.
Yeah.
Oof. And, you know, cause I always thought, hey, everything just exploded. They were just kind of
vaporized,
you know, they all exploded. They're boom.
Yeah.
But if you look through the documentation on it, there's like, they don't know whether or not the crew members remain conscious, but they looked at the wreckage and, they have switches that were being moved and toggled, stuff. I mean, they were
trying to get control of that pod.
I'm guessing so. Oof. But if it wasn't depressurized or anything, they might have been conscious for the entire fall of the impact, according to the article. So it's That's the crazy part to go, wait a second, they were actually alive during that like fall.
Yeah.
It's wild.
What
if you look at the Wikipedia page, there's like a, you can see the crew cabin in one of these shots still intact.
Oh man. Yeah. That is,
that extra sucks. If you never heard that before.
No. Like, yeah. Oh, I hadn't really heard that. I remember hearing that they thought part of it was ejected and, you know, there was possibility, but then I remember it quickly being said, nope. It's, you know, it's, they're all dead. Yep. What are they saying? Cause? Okay, so I'm going to read right from Wikipedia here. Crew cabin made of reinforced aluminum was particularly robust. During vehicle breakup, it detached in one piece and slowly tumbled into a ballistic arc. NASA estimated the load factor at separation to be between 12 and 20 Gs. Within 2 seconds, it had already dropped to below 4 G, and within 10 seconds, cabin was in free fall. This article, Wikipedia, is saying the forces involved at this stage were probably insufficient to cause major injury. The article says at least some of the crew were alive and at least briefly conscious after the breakup, as 3 of the 4 recovered personal egress air packs on the flight deck were found to have been activated. Those were Judith Resnick, mission specialist, Ellison Onizuka, and pilot Michael J. Smith. The location of Smith's activation switch on the backside of his seat likely indicated that either Resnick or Onizuka activated it for him. Astronaut Mike Mullane wrote that there had been nothing in our training concerning the activation of that, they call it the PEAP, air pack, in the event of an in-flight emergency. The fact that Judy or Elle had done so for Mike made them heroic in my mind. Investigators found their remaining unused air supply consistent with the expected consumption during the 2 minute and 45 second post-breakup trajectory. They fell for almost 3 minutes.
That sucks.
Holy cow. Didn't they say it was something with the O-rings or something on the rockets that...
Yeah, the actual cause of the explosion and everything, I thought it had to do with... I thought that's what it had to do with.
Yeah. I'm looking...
What was the actual cause of the...
So I'm looking at here because they're talking about like...
Failure in O-ring sealing a joint on a right solid rocket booster, which allowed pressurized hot gases and eventually flame to blow by the O-ring and contact the adjacent tank, causing structural failure.
Right. And this stayed on the news for weeks because I remember, you know, the funeral, everything was nationally televised, if I remember right.
Yep. Oh my gosh. But I didn't know that part about 2 minutes and 45 seconds even.
Yeah.
So I knew they were in there, but you know, you think, oh, they fell for 30 seconds.
Right.
If they're tumbling, but they're still strapped in. I mean, they're still, but 207 miles an hour hitting the water. It's like hitting a brick wall.
Right.
Well, and with that.
Yeah. So what do you think?
There's our top 10 events.
Yeah. What do you think down, but. on our first Digital Soup official list where we didn't just read someone else's? What do you think about the list? 86.
I think it's good. I think there's a lot. Those are some pretty dang huge events. And I think you got it right as far as the order of things there. I mean,
yeah, I didn't want to, you know, there's some pretty heavy stuff and I didn't want it to be all heavy, and then just, you know, Nintendo or whatever. So I tried to space it out a little
Top movie was Top Gun. I mean, hey.
Yeah. And I thought about movies and the only reason I didn't go into it is because I think I'd like to look at the top movies, games, and maybe not games, but top movies and music for sure on their own list. Based on like Billboard charts or different, you know, because music, really, when you look at it, you've got the overall top songs on the Billboard, but then you have like the rock charts and the pop charts and country charts, you know, whatever. So there's a lot of material there I didn't want to really get too deep into, but had to throw out the album of the year from Steve Winwood.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's good. So folks, stick around and hang out with us next time. We'll have another list for you and a bunch of other questions that nobody's asked us. So hope you've enjoyed it.
Well,
catch you next time.
Yeah. Before you sign off, I just want to give a reminder. I don't mean to cut you off there and make you do your ending again, but get looking for it, listeners, because we're going to be talking in a few more weeks about 1917, the film that just came out. From Sam Mendes, I believe.
for a second in my brain, I'm like, the year? Now we're going to do top events in 19.
Yes, a really top obscure events year. From 1917.
Somebody had scurvy.
Yeah, no, the film, the movie 1917 is our next super review. Yep. And I just wanted to remind you guys, so you had time to get your hands on it. You can grab it through multiple different sources online, rent it, whatever you want to do. A few bucks here and there, but give it a watch. Adam and I, neither one of us have seen it yet, so it's all new to us as well, and we'd love it if you joined us on that watch, almost like a book club, a movie club. So that'll be coming up in a few more weeks here into June.
I like it. All right, folks. You guys have an awesome week. Stay safe. We'll catch you next time.
All right, take care, guys.
Thank you for joining us, and come back next week for another cracking episode of The Digital Soup Podcast. This has been a Digital Soup production.